I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Kathy Nelson. Kathy, author of Photo Organizing Made Easy, is the founder of the Association of Personal Photo Organizers, a membership organization dedicated to helping hundreds of entrepreneurs from around the globe build successful photo preservation and organizing businesses. Considered a trailblazer in the photo organizing industry, she's been interviewed by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, The Atlantic, and Better Homes and Gardens, and is a regular contributor to House. She's also a sought-after speaker, presenting at numerous conferences on topics related to photo preservation, storytelling, and the art of creating an entirely new industry. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, excited to be here.
So, yes, as I've just mentioned, you created an entirely new industry. Why? What made you decide to do that?
I always tell people I didn't wake up one morning and think, today I'll think I'll create a new industry. But I did, and in reflecting back over the years, in about 2009, I was an early adopter to digital technology in the photo space. I would had spent many years helping clients organize their printed photos and put them in traditional scrapbook type photo albums. But noticed in about 2009 that the consumer was getting really frustrated, family and friends. They were unable to figure out how to get their memories from their memory cards to their computers. This was a little bit before the iPhone really took off as the replaced the point-and-shoot camera as the camera of choice always in our hands. But I noticed, and so a friend of mine said, you know, I was helping people all the time. And she said, well, what do you charge per hour to help me? And I was stumped by that question and thought, you know, I don't charge anything. And she said, well, that's crazy. I want to pay you. If you want to come to my home to help me, you have to let me pay you. So after we went round and round, I finally thought, okay. She said I had paid a professional organizer once when I downsized to help me move. And so we agreed on a price. I got to her home, and not only did she have memory cards that she couldn't figure out how to get from her camera to her computer, she had pulled out boxes of photos that she had inherited from her parents after they had passed away. And she was one of four children, and she was feeling a tremendous amount of guilt and anxiety that she hadn't taken the time to sort through those photos and get them digitized to pass them back to her siblings. But she also had lots of photos of her own children who at that point were in high school. So their early photos in life were analog printed photos, but their current photos were all digital. And she said, Kathy, I don't care how long it takes, but I guarantee there are hundreds of other Marias just like me who pay you to do this service or pay somebody to do this for them. So that was the moment I drove home, and I called that kind of my aha moment. And I thought, I wonder if that's true. And I started testing it here in my own hometown and found the concept of a photo organizer, recognizing that if the goal was to help people get their photos back into their life, if you're unorganized and you don't have a way to tell that story, which is really essentially why we take photos, I believe, to tell stories, then the consumer, everybody was just stuck. And sure enough, I found travel agencies, you know, hiring me to help me with their clients who had come on major trips, or I had people with old letters that they had, you know, inherited from family members and wanted to find a way to archive them. And it just kept growing from there. And then the story goes on. But I did find then other people across the country would ask me, well, I want to do what you're doing. That seems like a great idea. How are you doing it? I started realizing I'm not going to give away my intellectual property. Maybe I should I should charge people a fee to sell them the ideas that I had. And then eventually led itself into creating a very vibrant, growing membership community.
So Kathy, it seems like you clearly stumbled upon an opportunity in the marketplace. It's interesting to me that you paid attention and listened to what the marketplace was telling you and then responded in a way that got your foot in the door and then started to build business on top of that in multiple ways.
Right, exactly. I always, you know, there was an idea that I had heard about 7 or 8 years ago when I called my income that I was earning as in the one business I had, my incredibly shrinking paycheck, to the idea that you needed multiple streams of income. So early on, I had the idea that for me to have a successful small business, I needed to have multiple revenue streams, that one revenue stream wasn't probably going to be enough. And so I always kind of operated out of that thinking. And then, as you mentioned, I found that my own business, I could have been very successful and just had my own photo organizing business in my own community and been very successful. But I quickly realized that I could be even more successful if I found a way to help other small business owners not have to recreate the wheel. And so I noticed that you interviewed Robbie Baxter a few episodes back. She wrote the book, The Membership Economy, and the New Membership Economy, I think it was called. And she interviewed me. Actually, I'm in that book. And she was right on in the sense that the idea was I did a lot of research on what are membership communities and also looking at the association model. And I realized that I wanted to create that people, small business owners in particular, it's a very lonely business. And you're usually a very solo entrepreneurs, it can be very lonely. So if I could create a really vibrant community where the members serve each other, we would be more successful. And that's essentially what our community does. It's an amazing made up of actually now members all throughout the US, Canada, UK, growing in the Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand, South America. And they all connect with each other through different ways that we've created connection. And so that they're all really essentially have their own business model, but they're helping one another grow and succeed in their businesses.
Kathy, you're spot on correct that being a small business owner is very, very lonely. And small business owners gravitate towards communities where they can be with like-minded people and let their hair down and get help. What were the questions that you asked yourself when you were trying to explore what kinds of multiple revenue opportunities there might be in a new business?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first question was when people were asking me to share what I was doing and how I was doing it, because they were interested in maybe something similar, I really wrestled for a long time with how I give away that information without giving away my, you know, how do you monetize that in a way that was good for everybody, for the whole. And I was a member of the National Association of Professional Organizers, which is, and they had a local chapter. And I remember one day thinking, well, what rule is it that I can't start my own association? Is there any rules in the, you know, out there in the world that say, thinking was like, oh, you know, well, where do associations come from? I had no idea. And so I started asking that question and found no reason to say that I couldn't create my own association. And that's literally what I just decided to do in retrospect, not knowing really what that meant, but then becoming a real student of the concept.
Right. So the association then became your core?
Correct. The association is my core, but I still am. We'll be celebrating our 10th year next year, but this is our 9th year. And the association became the core, started out with maybe 20 members and then 100 members. And it just kept growing to the point that we are now. We have an annual conference. So our conference is a revenue generator. And for me, I feel like we serve two audiences, actually. Essentially, we serve the professional who will go out and offer these services. So just like people never heard of professional coaches or massage therapists or professional organizers at one time, the same is true of professional organizing. People are completely overwhelmed with their images today. So they take thousands of images. And if I asked you right now to pull out your 10 favorite photos from your phone, David, how hard would that be for you?
Don't ask.
Right. So it's just, yeah. And the tipping point has come. I mean, in some ways I say a lot of times as well, I didn't realize I was going to start as much of a technology company as I have, because what's happened as it's gotten more complex and a much higher need for technology skills for our members is really, you know, you understand the Mac operating system, a Windows operating system. If you have people have photos on a Galaxy phone or they have them on an iPhone or they have their analog photos, and it just, so we keep providing those resources and we tell our members, we're just one step ahead of your customer. You don't have to panic that you don't have all the answers. And if you get stuck, you come to our community forums and our Facebook group and you ask for help. And we've had many new members, like Apple people that are former Apple Genius Bar members and people that are Adobe software experts who have joined and are there as the subject matter experts for our members to help them. And there's no additional fee for that. So that was critical as well. I felt like when I made these decisions, I made a decision to make the community so that I say to my client when they come, they contact me, I'll say, you know, my goal is you're my customer. So my goal is to make sure that I provide for you all the resources that you need so that as long as you're considering this as a career and a business, there's no reason for you not to stay a member of our community. That the value that we far out exceed your expectations in terms of the value we provide.
Now, is there anything that you would suggest to people listening who haven't quite figured out what their core should be? But how, because you figured out what the core is, and it's the association. Do you have any suggestions for people about how to identify what the core is before they start looking at multiple revenue opportunities?
Right. I think one thing is that somebody had said to me early on too, was you had to have proof of concept. So that I always really grasped it. So I had to really work really hard at my own business model that I was creating for myself to prove that I could, that it was viable before I could turn it into, start telling other people they could do well at it. So I didn't, you know, the association where I'm so focused now, but in the early days, I really was doing everything I could to get my name out into the marketplace to test, made many mistakes. You know, the first client I remember I walked into, I went to a library or a small chamber of commerce business meeting. A woman sitting at the table asked me what I did. I said, I started a business. I help people organize their photos. She got all excited. Her friend had broken her leg and was complaining about all these photos. She set me up. I went to this woman's home. And I realized when I walked in, I had to borrow a pencil and a piece of paper from her to take notes. I mean, it was like, so I made note of those mistakes in some ways. Okay, so you need to have like a plan in place before you go to call on the client. What is it that I need? Then eventually those were that was the information then I passed on to the people that were asking me to model themselves after what I was doing. But I was really testing it for myself and keeping copious notes about what my workflow was, what was working, what wasn't working, so that I was improving the services I was offering.
Right. And so once you have the proof of concept and you have that core model, what questions did you ask to help figure out what the different revenue opportunities were?
Right. So again, I looked at other models. So I spent a lot of time studying research, you know, kind of Google membership. I don't even remember the words I used at the time, but I would really look, because there's a lot of models out there and a lot of people are doing this well. So I kind of tried to find, I realized that online education was a growing part of a revenue stream for us, that by offering, you know, selling courses has really exploded, obviously. But at the time, that was kind of early on. Now we have identified the do-it-yourself market, and we have a whole, you know, course line that we're launching to the, not only to the professional field, but also to the do-it-yourself market. So I studied what other successful businesses that have nothing to do with photo organizing, but were kind of looking to reach people who were paying a fee to be a member of their organization. So what were they providing those people that made sense? And then how could I copy that?
Right. So you were looking at two things. You were looking at the photo organizing field itself, and then you were looking at corollaries in other kinds of businesses that had similar models to see what was working for them in today's world with technology being what it is.
Correct. And I also, there was one book I bought I think it was called The Death of the Membership Community as We Know It. It was kind of there's the Association of Associations, which I stumbled upon. And then I found through their books is that there was a small book that somebody had written about how the millennials, this new generation, aren't joining organizations like they did at one time. And you know, so what was it that you need to provide to remain relevant? And it was really value, because today people expect, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to be nickeled and dimed. They can get information. We are living in an information society. So you want to make sure that the information you're providing is of superior value and quality, and that you're, and so I just, you know, studied those different models and then made sure that I adopted myself accordingly. And I still do that. I mean, I'm still changing. There's no coasting going on.
No. Standing still is never an option.
No. I think the idea of community. So, I mean, again, I know there's lots of different listeners. They have different business models. But the idea that other small, I believe also in the power of, you know, working together with other like-minded businesses. So the idea that that you don't have to be successful by yourself, the power of working together with other businesses and helping one another achieve success. So why wouldn't I made sure I started teaming up with like our local town person who fixes home computers. I realized, you know, they were always going in working with the consumer when their computer crashed. I'm sure they weren't asking them about their photos. So I met and went with them. I met with the local computer like person you could drop your computer off when it crashed. I found the people that were doing scanning in our area because I didn't want to offer scanning services. And I said, hey, if I bring you scanning business and I act kind of as a sales lead for you, will you give me a discount so then I can upcharge that to my client? So I set that up for myself, and then now I have modeled that for our community. So in other words, I would if I was up there bringing business, I mean, somebody said to me, what about my home movies? I had never even considered home movies when I started this. Like, wow, they all need to be digitized. So I found somebody that did that. I brought him like, you know, 25 tapes. He normally say charge $20 a tape. He charged me $18 a tape. I charged my client the $20 a tape and I kept the difference. So I was always, again, that's another revenue stream. I was always kind of on the lookout for how can I work with other small businesses that we can, a rising tide lifts all boats. So can we all work together and not see each other as competitors, but what is it that I can bring to the table and what can they bring to the table? And I think that's a critical step for small business owners to think outside their own sphere of influence, but other look to other companies and other small businesses that you can work together.
Hmm. Kathy, what have been some of the ways that you have been helped in developing your own strategy? Where have you learned some of these great techniques?
Well, you know, early on, I was looking at the people that you've interviewed too, is Mark Helper. He was one of my SCORE. I went to SCORE, the Small Business Association, and he and another person were actually my SCORE business leaders, which was interesting. But one thing I tell our members as well, the first SCORE, I live in Hartford, Connecticut, and I didn't really connect with that. They didn't get what I was doing. It was just, I just wasn't a good connection. And somebody had said to me, you know, try Lower Fairfield County, which is where there's a lot more top companies. So maybe more experienced business executives. So I did. And that's how I ended up with that team. And I drove an hour and a half to 2 hours every week or every month for my SCORE business meeting. You know, I put a lot of time and money in, you know, road trips into this. I also joined networking meetings that weren't, again, within my local community. I found where there were more progressive thinkers in business in communities that were a couple hours from me. So I think that's important as well, that maybe wherever you're living and starting your business, if it's not a, you know, an entrepreneurial mindset savvy community, then, and you have to drive an hour or two to get to one that's a little bit more, I think it's worth your time and investment to do that.
Hmm. So at this point, how many different revenue streams do you have coming into your business?
I have to count. That's a good question. I mean, we have, I should know it off the top of my head, right? But we have our membership fees, which is one revenue stream. We have our training. We have our conferences, and I have my sponsors. And then we'll be, it's about five different revenue streams, I'd say, coming in.
Kathy, what advice do you have for solopreneur experts that have no recurring revenue yet in their business? They're essentially selling their expertise either on a project basis or on an hourly basis. What advice do you have for them about how to start developing some recurring revenue?
Yeah, that's something we work with our members a lot about, in terms of the idea of, you know, you don't want to just go in and organize somebody's life photo collection just one time. People continue to take photos. So how can you set yourself up on a residual, you know, a monthly payment plan or a monthly plan? So I would think, you know, there's always opportunities. And the consumer today is we're very used to being charged an annual, you know, monthly fee against our credit card for something. So I would think having that conversation with whatever need that you're fulfilling, you know, you have to put the customer's needs first. But so how do you deliver over and above service? How do you be the go-to person for whatever it is that you're trying to sell to that client? And then how do you set yourself up in a relationship where it's a long-term relationship, so that you are building long-term revenue that continues to come in month after month? That to me is the key to success.
Right. Which means what I'm hearing from you is you have to kind of delve deep into the customer need and unearth what is the ongoing need that is going to set you up to be able to provide some kind of residual service or product with that customer.
In a way to do that, if you feel uncomfortable, is say, you know, I'd love to have a conversation with you over coffee. I did a lot of this as well, and I'm thinking back. I scheduled many coffee conversations with friends and different colleagues I knew. And I'd say, I have this idea. I just want to run it by you. I'm not really sure of it yet. What do you think? And again, so if you're wondering, like, how do I provide additional revenue? What are the needs of the client? Maybe ask them, would you have coffee with me and have a conversation? And then ask them lots of questions. And people love to be asked questions. They love to be the expert to give you their feedback. I mean, people today, I still thank the people. When I see people, I'm always like that friend Maria. I make sure I mention Maria's name. I mean, if she didn't say that to me, which was just a flippant comment on her part, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I think it's important to ask people to tell you, you know, sit down, have a conversation with them, connect with them, and then quiz them about and listen carefully to what they're saying and see if you can undercover a need that you can then meet. That person you're meeting for coffee may not need you. That's okay. But they may help you come up with an idea to offer your service to somebody else that may need you.
Yeah. What was one example of something that was really surprising yet super beneficial that you heard in one of these conversations?
Well, one of the most surprising things, again, was the idea I was viewing my jobs as kind of a standalone, come in, solve the immediate problem and not consider the next need until a customer one day, because I knew who their whole family was, I had organized the photos. She went on vacation and came back with her memory card filled with photos. And she looked at me and she actually, you know, I was asking her questions about their trip and I was really interested. And then I said, well, you should make a photo book about that trip. And she said, well, would you do that for me? And that was like a light bulb moment. I realized at that moment, I shouldn't have been seeing her as like a client I met with like 7 or 8 times. And then I was going to shake hands and say goodbye, that I had actually she led me in a way to that. But from then on, I became their chief memory officer. I'd always, before their vacations, I'd say, hey, take those photos. I'll make you that photo book when you come back. And so it was an example of where I recognized there was more opportunities than I had seen in front of me.
Right. And I love the way you came up with that phrase, chief memory officer.
Yeah, we're not, and we're working actually a lot with professional photographers right now in that model, because they tend to go out and take these beautiful photos. And then they see the people today think they don't need photographers as much because they think they're taking all these great photos with their phone. Instead of seeing that as a competitor, they should see that as an asset. They can, because that client who's taking all those photos with their phone needs help what to do with all their not so good photos that they're taking. And then also with the professional photographer can be their key person with all of their lifetime of photos. So it's just a new way of thinking. You're shifting your mindset.
Right. Which also means that part of your shifting of your mindset, you are probably able to come up with some descriptor for yourself that identifies a recurring need in your ideal customer.
Yes. And just an example of, so say for us, we're targeting professional photographers as a growth opportunity. I went to one of their national conferences. My goal was to interview 30 professional photographers. I did what I just said. I sat down and I said, you know, it took a lot of courage. A lot of times I'd say, hi, this was just 6 weeks ago. Hi, my name is Kathy Nelson. I started this company called, and they all look at me like, photo organizing? Like that's, you know, they're not thinking about that. Let me ask you some questions. What do you think about this? And what language do I need to help you to, once I explained it and they understood, I started saying, what's the language I'm missing? Because I knew I wasn't talking their language. I knew it made sense, but I knew I wasn't communicating very effectively. So again, that's another example where I went on a research kind of survey to understand what's the language that they need to hear that I'm not saying to help them see the value that I could provide for them.
Yeah. Kathy, you've done such a remarkable job at listening to the marketplace and uncovering opportunities to really come up with a paradigm shift. It sounds like over and over and over again. And I'm wondering who else you might know personally who has been successful like that at smashing plateaus.
I thought about this question because I've been listening to your podcast. And there's a woman named Jen Lee. And I met her. She was a business coach initially. She worked with Spark and Hustle with Tori Johnson to the series. But she's a travel agent. She now works in Travels International. She's like their CEO. But the travel industry actually has not viewed their small travel agents as entrepreneurs. As a tradition. And Jen came into that industry as an entrepreneur with an entrepreneurial mindset. And is viewing and helping those companies rethink how they treat travel agents and seeing them as really truly pioneer small business owners who should be treated as entrepreneurs. And she's been pretty fascinating to watch how she's taken her, you know, her love and passion for small business owners and gone into an industry that's actually growing because people are now getting overwhelmed with all the choices online. So there's actually a resurgence of the need for travel agents in the industry. And then she's helping them see themselves as real business owners. So there's a shift happening in that industry as well.
Yeah, what a remarkable example. And Kathy, what can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
Well, I just published my first book, Photo Organizing Made Easy. I'm starting to think about my second book. Our annual conference is will be at the end of March this year. So if people are interested in photo organizing and learning about it, certainly check out our website. And we're just going to continue to grow. And, you know, our goal is to really become a household concept, just like, again, business coaches and are, that you would just assume you hire somebody to help you with your photos.
Sounds great. How can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
You can, so our website is, I have two websites, www.appo.org is the association's website. And then my own personal website, KathyNelson.com, which is where my book, my speaking opportunities are. And then for both of those, you'll be linked to our blogs, Facebook, Twitter, you know, all the traditional social media accounts. So I have two business identities. One is the founder of the association, appo.org, and then my own brand, Kathy Nelson. Kathy with an I, C-A-T-H-I.
We will include this in the show notes.
Okay, great.
Great. My guest today has been Kathy Nelson, CEO and founder of The Photo Organizers. Kathy, thanks so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today, having a great discussion about what you do, how you've built your business, and how you help others in business. Thank you again, Kathy, for joining us.
Happy to be here.